Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Got a little scratchy throat going on, so I apologize in advance, but I think you'll really like the program that we have prepared for this evening. Remember also that you can find us on Facebook, and you can email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. Our guest this evening is Kat Bradley of So Ethico. In just a moment, she will be here with us and tell you all about what she is up to. This is Heartstock. Thanks for listening.
But on the other side, it didn't say nothing.
That time was big for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. This land was made for you and me.
This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy, your host. Our guest this evening is Kat Bradley of So Ethico. Hi, Kat.
Hi, Carol. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being our guest here. And can you please give our listeners a little brief introduction here of what So Ethico is and what you do?
Yes. So, as you said, my name is Kat. I am the founder of So Ethico. And what it really comes down to is every day, my biggest goal is to build power for women in business. I believe that more amazing women and business owners need power and access more than ever before. And that really means a bigger voice, more money, access to funding. You know, and this drive really originates from growing up in a single parent household and kind of watching my mom, who was a data scientist at Lockheed Martin. And she really struggled with kind of a lot of these things. And just recognizing that piece of my story isn't unique. Women struggling in business and struggling to take power in business is not unique. And watching that in a single parent household isn't unique. And that was something that I also saw in my own career, from working in nonprofits to working in tech at publicly traded companies with over 5,000 employees. You know, I was attending leadership training and seeing that out of 200 people in the room, only like 10 of them were women. And a lot of those leaders who were being trained, they were gaining recognition and they were mostly in marketing and HR. And so just recognizing, like, how do we build more power for women in business? And so I do marketing. I help female founders to build their first marketing departments and act as an interim CMO. And that's not necessarily just for startups, but also for women who have been in business. I have one client that's been in business since 1997, and they just hadn't needed a marketing department before. And when it came time, we found each other, and now we're doing it.
You mentioned growing up in a home where the head of the house was a single mom. I did the same thing, and I experienced and saw firsthand my mom really working very hard to support us. So what was that like for you? And was that in New York?
It was. I live in New York City now, but actually I grew up mostly in Orlando, Florida, and I've lived all over the country. I got my master's degree in Eugene, Oregon. I've lived in San Antonio, Texas, originally from North Stonington, Connecticut. My dad was in the Navy there. And yeah, I mean, growing up in a single parent household with a single mom will definitely change the way that you see a lot of life. You know, my mom, who is incredible, she was a data scientist, like I said, for Lockheed Martin, and now she works for a company called General Dynamics. And, you know, growing up watching her, she was someone who, not a girly girl, you know, and I gained a lot of probably leadership qualities and skills from her because she's very, like, get it done, you know, powerful, kind of intense person. And, you know, seeing her kind of struggle through figuring out how to raise two kids, you know, she went to grad school when I was in high school. So, and she didn't even go to college until she was in her 40s, you know, but seeing her kind of go through all of that and work really, really hard and make it happen, make it work, I think was a big inspiration for me to just say, how can we build power for women in this situation? I think that a lot of true happiness in our lives comes from the ability to not avoid problems altogether, but to decide what problems we want to solve. And so, you know, when it comes to business, that question for me is, how do we get your business to a position where you get to decide what problems you want to solve every day rather than how are you constantly putting out fires?
Mm-hmm. And why specifically women? Is it because you saw yourself as a powerful woman and the business environments that you encountered were not friendly to that? Or tell us a little more
There are a lot of answers to that question, actually. You know, it started for me seeing, as I said, my background is actually in nonprofits, and then I moved into a tech company on Wall Street. That was a large conglomerate and had, you know, great leaders that I got to learn from, which was awesome. But just seeing, like, you know, I'm here in leadership training, where are the women? They're not there. You know, it just wasn't common in the company that I was working for. And seeing across the board that a lot of people who were doing kind of that, you know, manager level, like mid-level work, a lot of times were women. And then, you know, up top, it wasn't necessarily as diverse as it should be. And that, you know, that of course goes for ethnic and racial diversity. It goes with gender diversity, and not just, you know, women, but that's also a problem with people who don't identify as male or female, you know, and other genders. But just seeing that lack of diversity across the board, I guess in my own experience, was something that was like, it made me curious, you know, what's missing here that's causing that stop. You know, and after doing research, and one of the things that I really like to focus on for my clients is really, how do we build money for you? How do we build financial power? And a big part of that is, how do we get you access to capital? How do we get you access to funding? What does venture capital look like for you? You know, is venture capital even something that's appropriate? You know, and what would other avenues to funding look like? And so when you dig deeper into that, we find that when it comes to funding, women are, I mean, this is probably not even the first time you're hearing this, but women are outstandingly underfunded when it comes to venture capital and access to money like that. I think the statistic right now is something like only 4% of VC-funded businesses are female-owned. And even with that, even recognizing that, there are so many studies that say that female-founded companies or companies that have female founders on the founding team are more likely to make more money and have more successful businesses over time. You know, one example is that, despite severe funding gap that we're seeing, and this is actually a quote from Forbes, startups founded and co-founded by women actually perform better over time, generating about 10% more in cumulative revenue over a 10-year period. You know, a study over 350 startups, Mass Challenge and BCG, determined that businesses founded by women deliver higher revenue, more than 2 times as much per dollar invested than those founded by men. Women-owned companies are actually better investments for financial backers. You know, there are statistics that show even, and again, this information is from Forbes, there are statistics that show that VCs could actually be making an additional $85 million over 5 years if they just invested equally in both men and women founded companies. You know, and I can only imagine what the statistics would be for people who don't identify as female or male. You know, and a big part of that is the struggle. If you are not accustomed to being handed things, you end up being more prepared as a founder. You end up being able to struggle more because, frankly, you're a little bit more used to it. And, you know, we all kind of know that businesses, entrepreneurs have to be used to struggle. They have to be capable of being uncomfortable for long periods of time because, you know, that's part of the risk you take with entrepreneurship.
Well, I think it's great that you're talking about finances and money as a marketer. Do you have a background in finance, or what did you do before you founded So Ethico?
Yeah, kind of right. So in terms of finance, when I started So Ethico, it was one of those things where I sort of looked at what was out there and what my background was. And I thought, when it comes to this conversation, when it comes to this conversation of entrepreneurship, what are people the most afraid of? And I feel like having these conversations about finance is one of those things that is tough to tackle. And so I actually hired a CPA to tutor me for probably about 6 months to be like, okay, how do we have these conversations and what tools can we create that make it much easier to have these conversations, and how do we, you know, open this up to just make it more accessible? And, you know, I don't have a background in finance. My background is in marketing. That being said, marketing departments have, you know, financial structures they have to follow. We have budgets we have to follow. We still have to be able to use Excel. We still have to be able to do a lot of those things that you would do. I mean, not all companies are like that. Some, I guess, would outsource that to, you know, the controller in their company. But the companies that I've worked for, that wasn't the case. We were building our own budgets. And it's actually one of my secret things that I really love. I love building budgets for companies. But my background is in marketing. My master's degree is from the University of Oregon. I was doing marketing for nonprofits there. And I worked actually in museums and art organizations before I started working at a tech company on financial districts in New York. And we handled, it's very sexy, but we handled relational databases, SQL Server databases. And so that was my... my introduction to working with those kinds of companies.
And what made you decide to found your company? Was there an impetus that kind of made you say, this is it, I have to go down this road?
That's a great question, because I think that entrepreneurs, first off, I've always kind of had that entrepreneurial spirit. And there is this thing I heard once that I think was really smart when it comes to having that attitude, is that if you feel like that, if you feel like you want to own your own business, avoid it as long as possible until you just get to the point where you just have to go for it. You know, it's a feeling that you get where it's just like, I can't do anything else other than do whatever it is that I need to do for myself. But no, nothing specific happened that kind of triggered me, other than I would say that there was probably like several years of turnover in my brain that was just like, I'm feeling these problems, I'm seeing these problems, I want to be able to solve them. And I started kind of in the ethical fashion space, actually working with designers, because I you know, have this background of art, have this background of, you know, seeing design constantly. And I'm used to working in nonprofits, and I believe very strongly in the importance of a true mission. And so I thought, hey, how do I put those things together? And that's what I came up with, was ethical fashion. And then the more I kind of got into it, all of a sudden I was basically doing consulting for people, but I wasn't charging for it. And then, you know, eventually I had 4 clients and that I wasn't charging anything for. And I realized, you know, maybe this is the business, and it's something that I really love doing. And it's something that, you know, the people that I'm working with really have a hard time with. And so what can I do to help these companies grow? And then the more that I got into it, the more I realized kind of what direction I wanted to take it. And that's how I got here.
And you mentioned you have a background in the arts. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah. So my undergrad is from the University of Central Florida. I did art history there. And I also worked at the Orlando Museum of Art. That was my first internship. And then I worked in museums in Orlando. I was an assistant registrar, a contract assistant registrar. After that, I moved to Oregon and did graduate school, and also worked with a nonprofit there called Create Eugene. I worked with the Journal of Arts Management Law and Society, JAMLS, which is actually out of Boston right now. And after I graduated, and I also had like student jobs. I was a librarian, so I could, you know, help get my tuition paid for. After that, I graduated and kind of thought, what is the bravest thing that I can do right now? What's going to be the hardest thing in my career that I can just get out of the way right away? And I moved to New York to do that. Moved here, started working in museums here, worked with the Jewish Museum on the Upper East Side, and then also worked with, there's an annual festival called the Museum Mile Festival. So did a little bit of work with them. Nothing serious, but got to know a lot of the other museum people kind of in the area through that. And that's when I was hired by this tech company on Wall Street. So altogether, I mean, I've been through a lot of different mission-based organizations, and then got to see kind of the other side of that, what it was like to become sort of a vendor for companies rather than being the mission-based organization itself. And that really, I think, worked marketing the number one thing that is different about working in marketing for a nonprofit versus for a for-profit company is the understanding of how to develop relationships with people. Because when you're working at a nonprofit, the goal isn't to make money. I mean, the goal in many companies isn't to make money. Anything that's really mission-based, you have something that runs deeper. But with a nonprofit, it's not ever about making money. It becomes about how to build a movement. And building a movement is like asking for a piece of someone's soul. And it's a lot harder to ask for a piece of a person, a piece of their heart, than it is to ask for something that's in their wallet.
And let's talk a little bit more about that when we come back. We're going to take a quick music break, and I think that's a good segue into our next question. This is Heartstock. Thanks for listening. Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Our guest this evening is Kat Bradley with So Ethico. And we were just talking about how building relationships is much more difficult than just flat out asking people for money. Maybe I paraphrased that incorrectly, but Kat, why is that good for business, asking for a piece of someone's heart?
So when it comes to business, this is kind of how I define the difference between a business and a hobby. There are a lot of companies that start because the founder is like, oh, I enjoy doing this thing and other people seem to like it. So like, let me just see if I can get people to pay me for it. I believe that that is a hobby that you want to get paid for. A business is when you see a problem and see a group of people who have a problem and you become obsessed with how to fix things for that group of people surrounding that particular problem. And in order to do that, in order to really, truly problem solve, you have to get to know people very, very well. You have to understand where they're coming from, why something specific is happening. You have to understand all of the situation that surrounds it. And that means really, truly building a deep relationship. And when it comes to relationships, and this is something that, I mean, time and time again, this has been proven with my clients and even in my personal life. You know, not just dealing with business, but, you know, it comes across everywhere. There are three things you can't fake in business, which is production, having a really good quality product. You can't fake your finances. You know, you can't like cheat on your taxes, for example, or you shouldn't. And you can't fake relationships. But when there's one that you really can't fake, it's relationships. Because I don't care how much money you have or how much money your company has. If I don't like you, I'm not going to work with you. And that's not me. That's everybody. You know, it is important to develop strong relationships and strong problem-solving skills and start with that when it comes to creating solutions in any business. Because the moment that a founder starts to go off and think, I just want to do my own thing and make whatever it is that I want, and I don't really care if it solves the problem that my customers are asking to solve, the moment that that happens, that's when your business, I believe, that's when a business starts to really suffer and have problems because you're making the wrong action.
Well, let's look at it the other way. How do you get it to take off with this relationship building process? Is that through the brand story, or maybe talk a little bit about how that works and how that's a reflection of your process?
Yeah, absolutely. So if I'm understanding your question properly, and if I'm not, please interrupt me. What you're asking is, how do we start this relationship building and how do we make it actually work for your company or whatever it is you're trying to start?
Definitely. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The first thing that you do is you highlight, what is the central goal? What is the central problem that I'm trying to solve? And then you find the perfect person. And I personally still do subscribe to the ideal client avatar concept. I actually build ideal client avatars probably much more deeply into business, and I really orchestrate that the business around that in a lot of ways. One thing that I offer to my clients is what's called enterprise customer analysis, where, you know, we can do these really deep dives and then build the entire company around that, which I think is paramount for a successful company. But what you do is you find that central problem, central theme that you really want to focus on. And then in particular, in this particular question, this is one of many different things that I do with customers, my own clients. I do what I call a brand story mashup, where I sort of create this like Venn diagram that covers the central problem, the central theme that you want to deal with. And then you take the versions of the story, you know, you get to know your client extremely, extremely well, like down to the level of what do they put in their coffee in the morning? I want to know, you know, but you find the things that are important to the customer and the stories that their lives are kind of anchored at. And then you find what is important to you, what stories you can tell out of personal experience. And then you create a Venn diagram and say, where do they overlap? And then you elaborate and expand on those stories. And of course, you do a ton of research. You start with data. You know, you use Pew Research Center. You use, you know, tools on Google. I like to use SEO a lot with my companies. I am also Moz certified for SEO. So we do a lot of research and come up with a lot of data to prove what we're talking about, because I do believe that marketing, you know, you really can't just like start guessing and then just like seeing what sticks. I really do think that starting with data will save you in the long run, even if it takes a little bit more time in the beginning. So yeah, when it comes to creating those relationships, it really comes down to doing the right research, making sure that you're approaching it from the correct standpoint of solving someone's problem and not just showing off what your solution to the problem is, because a lot of times if that's what you're doing, then you're going to miss some huge key flags from your customer. Getting to know them really well, understanding what's important to them, and then coming back and reflecting what is important to them through your own story. So that way you can create an accessible conversation for the person that you're trying to work with.
And you sent me a little blurb about union organizing. I don't know if you know, but Butte has this huge history of union organizing. How is your process in marketing in general like union organizing? Because it has a rough history. Elbows, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's this concept in union organizing called the organizer's mind, where you take this like very large, like scary, unattainable goal, right? And you break it down piece by piece and say, okay, we want to build power for this particular group of people. And we build power by, you know, for example, like unseating board members on XYZ board and then placing one of our union members or one of our union reps on that board. And then we have, you know, union representation on the board, for example. So, you know, in order to break down the steps of that like giant goal that you have, you create a map through the organizer's mind, where you essentially create this upside down triangle almost that says, okay, we have this like big goal that's at the top. And then we want to break it down and say, like, what are the smaller steps underneath that will help us to get there? And what are the smaller steps underneath that will help us to get there? And then you continuously break it down into almost bite-sized pieces in each step. And you get to the very bottom. And all of a sudden, the very bottom, that first step is very accessible. You know, how do I build relationships in order to eventually get myself that seat on the board in order to build power? You know, just as an example. Marketing and building relationships in a lot of ways is very similar to that concept, where you're taking, and this is a big part of why working with mission-based companies is so important to me. You know, I do believe in things like union organizing, and I do believe in paying people fair wages and, you know, making sure that they're not overworked and that sort of thing. And so when it comes to working with mission-based companies, those are concepts that I'm working with all the time. And so communicating, building communication and building relationships with your customers, you know, and frankly, you know, treating people fairly in your company should be part of your communication system, should be one of the things that your customers care about. But when it comes to creating those communications and those relationships, it's very similar to building an organizer's mind.
And you mentioned mission-based companies. Maybe share a little bit more about that. Why is that important to you, and what are some of the mission-based companies that you've worked with in the past?
Sure. So building a mission for a business, you know, is a very particular thing. It's something that can be nailed down. I think that's one of the biggest components of having a true mission-based company is we are looking to solve this specific problem. Not we're looking to help people to do something kind of watered down. Having a mission in your company is something that your customers, your employees, you know, other people around you in the community can use as a litmus test to say, like, is this company legitimately doing the work that they are setting out to do? And is that something that impacts the greater good for the better? You know, so a couple of the companies that I've worked with, for example, I have one client, she's kind of a solopreneur right now, but she's a public speaker.
We've only got about a minute left, and I really want to make sure that our listeners get some information as to how they might reach out to you.
So I do have a website, which is soetico.com, S-E-W-I-C-O. I also do have a Medium account. If you are there, my handle is just @KatBradley. And I have an email address, which is kat@soethico.com, so I can be reached there as well.
Fantastic. Kat Bradley of So Ethico, thank you so much for sharing your story and what you're up to. And this is Heartstock. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
And on the sign it says, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.
That time was made for you and me.